Please do not mistake my intent in going through this particular business tonight. I've not tried to present to you an ideal picture of a humanist or an ideal picture of a social scientist. It obviously isn't there, and that's not my intent. And I doubt very much that I've ever described any social scientist or any humanist who ever lived. I don't think you could name anybody who would fit exactly what I've been talking about. All I have tried to do here is to distinguish in humanist and in social scientists certain tendencies which make for rather different approaches to the study of man, which suggest the use of different materials, and these materials in turn require different kinds of methodologies, and they lead to different centers of interest on the part of the specialist who works with them. And I would submit immediately that neither is better than the other. This is not a qualitative distinction in terms of one being better than the other. I've said this because I think we actually have a kind of sub rosa internecine feud within the academic world. It isn't polite to bring it out in the open always, but nonetheless it's there. And on many occasions I've seen this coloring what we are able to do for the advancement of the knowledge of man in our society. And so I would like to bring out in the open the fact that there do seem to be two somewhat different kinds of approaches. I think a brief consideration of them reveals immediately that they are essentially complementary approaches. Let me give a few instances. Just take the question of time. If I understand what's going on in certain fields of the social sciences, there is developing a set of ideas which are going to require, again, an integration in the studies of those who've dealt with the past and those who deal with present manifestations. Just take the insights that have come from anthropology as an example. Increasingly, we realize that man has not only tremendous biological inheritance, but he has a tremendous cultural inheritance, and that the present form of the culture is almost inexplicable without a knowledge of the history of the cultural group that you're dealing with. The cross-sectional character of anthropology in terms of time among the anthropologists themselves is increasingly giving way to the idea that you've got to go back in order to understand the forms that you see in front of you today. Actually, then, within the timely, current, contemporary fields of the social sciences, we see these research results leading in the direction of a renewed emphasis on the study of the past in conjunction with the present. Let me point to another area where this seems to be obvious. The results of the study of personality development by social psychologists and psychiatrists are teaching us that if we wish to understand present behavior, we have to go back and back and back, not only in the life of the individual, but in the succession of generations that lie beyond the present individual into the whole cultural setting in which the contemporary individual finds himself. So that even the modernist is being brought around to the point where he has greater and greater respect for the importance of the dead past to an understanding of the living present. So that even in terms of this time distinction, we face the necessity of bringing together the specialist in terms of the past with the specialist who concentrates on the present living forms. Obviously, without getting into philosophical disquisition now, we need a knowledge of means as well as a knowledge of ends. We need a knowledge of the mechanism and the processes as well as the purposes and the objectives. These are natural complementary parts that have to be seen as related one to the other. And we need a knowledge of the uniformities as well as a recognition of the uniqueness of the individual. Both approaches are obviously required for anything like a balanced and sensible study of man. Ideally, both approaches, I suppose, should be combined in the same scholar. But I think we all recognize that to be proficient in all of these skills that are involved now in the study of man is indeed beyond the capacity of most individuals, in fact, all of us. But there are practically very great difficulties involved here. But I think there's increasing evidence that we need to find mechanisms, technologies in the field of learning that will permit a far greater exchange of points of view among these representatives of disciplines that now live very much apart. In any case, we certainly should attempt to develop a spirit of toleration between the humanist and the social scientist. Each one ought to realize that the other is worthy of his salt and has an important part to play in building up a rounded and sensible study of man. But best of all, and this is in the area of invention, where I think academic institutions have yet to accomplish things that are undone, the humanist and the social scientist should be encouraged to be curious about the work of each other and should be helped to find ways to increase the flow among the different disciplines. The results of their inquiries and insights in one field need to be seen for the light which they can show on problems elsewhere. Now, this leads me to suggest that I think in the humanities especially, we can go too far in this emphasis on individual research. Now, don't mistake me. I don't think that the view of distant vistas of great possibilities comes in a collective mind. The great discoveries, when they finally come to light, I suppose, have to come in the mind of one man who sees this possibility imaginatively. But if we still rely on the work of the individual scholar from the point of view of the final act of synthesis, of seeing these relationships in a whole, it doesn't follow that we have to continue emphasizing the loneliness of the life of the scholar. He may ultimately put his ideas together inside his own head and produce an individual result, but we could certainly move in the humanistic and social science fields, I believe, toward the development of methods of joint research in the sense, at least, that we improve the way, ways for common consideration of common problems, each man in turn writing up his own results as he sees them, but increasing the possibilities of exchange among representatives of the different disciplines. I think it's only by developing technologies in a field, now techniques of learning, in this field where in the humanities and social sciences now we have almost none, that we can move toward the development of a coordinated and meaningful study of man. Only then can we get away from the fragmentary, disorderly, even faction-ridden study of man, which is characteristic of the work of the American University and College today. It's only in that way that we can develop a more reasonable pattern, which will give us a better understanding of man in his wholeness. I would suggest, then, that we have need of inventions in the fields of the humanities and social sciences that will permit us to combine elements from many different specializations in the production of results that may be very meaningful and very important to us as a nation, just thinking of it in terms of the current scene, when we live in a world which has shrunk down into one little world where we can no longer ignore the human problems that exist on all parts of the globe, and where if there is anything that we need, it is a tremendous advance in the capacity to deal with the study of man in all of the cultures in all parts of the world. There is then room for enterprise and imagination and invention in the humanistic and social science area, which is yet to be accomplished. And I think on every college and university campus, the crying need now is for inventiveness and fresh insights into the methodologies for solving some of the problems that I've suggested tonight.